Okay. That we'll come back to the U2 song in at the end of our session, but it is pretty impactful. I know people sing all sorts of stuff that they don't think of, don't think about. But to get the whole audience singing that song, and then to about not having found what they're looking for, and then to go on to singing the good news about Jesus, is hugely, hugely impressive. A couple of years back, I was in a seminar in which an authority on U2 was speaking, and had just looked how his development in understanding the gospel had changed over the last 10 years, and took one particular song, can't remember which one it was now, but he just went through and looked at how it had developed over intelligently over that period. And I suppose one of the big answers to not having found what we're looking for is finding out what God has made us for. I had a really excellent moment this week, probably the best moment in my week. I heard somebody talking and saying, just talking about a possible project and thinking about what they were going to do next and that kind of thing. And they said, I was made for this. I was made for this. It was just a passing comment, just slid past. And I thought, wow. And then I came back to it and thought, fancy being able to say, I was made for this. When I'm doing this particular thing, I was made for this. Now, of course, there are some of us who get totally the wrong impression about what we were made for. This particular person wasn't talking about sitting in a bar by the beach, waiting for with a big beer, big cold beer, waiting for your lunch to turn up. Because when I'm in that environment, I sometimes think, I was made for this. Yeah, not very difficult, particularly if it's autumn in Spain or February somewhere else that's warm. I definitely was made for this. I was not made for the British winter. Quite often, every other week, as you know, I go to visit my parents. And as you come along by Windsor on the M4, you can see the planes coming in and going, and I always find myself thinking, where are they going? After I've been when I used to travel regularly for work, like Greg does, I would get to the point where I would have no interest in getting on another plane at all. It would last for about 3 months, and then I would want to travel again. But knowing what we're made for, finding what we're looking for, is at a deeper level than that, and that's what we've been working at. God has made us who we are. We've looked at this and said that in all the different Bible passages, it's essentially the same message. In most cases, it's God has made us what we are. The NIV talks about God's handiwork, and New Living Translation talks about God's masterpiece. You remember, those of you who were here the first session we did, that we had this really strange video at the beginning, which I couldn't make sense of, and lots of you actually made more sense than I did. Can you remember what it was? Yeah, it was this one. Yeah? This girl who walked along and found some strings, and then she picked up, found this picture, and the picture had elements of the good things that had happened to her, the experiences of pain that she'd gone through, and a pile of other stuff. And eventually, it was restored to the place that it should be. It was, in fact, I just had a surprise there. Let me get back to where I was. I'm really sorry about that. But God has made us what we are, and he wants us to be involved with him. God has made us what we are, and in our union with Christ Jesus, he's created us for a life of good deeds, which he has already prepared for us to do. Now have a little think about that at the moment. God has got a pile of good deeds, Mary, which is prepared for you to do. I don't think it means that he's got this list that you're supposed to guess at so you can tick them off in specifics. I don't think these guys thought about, you know, to-do lists in the way that we do. But, Julie, that God has got a whole host of good works, a way of living that is prepared for you. That's got not to do, well, it might have to do with your job, but these good works are the things we've got to look at this morning, and with that, we'll be able to finish off this series of sessions. So, let's move on a bit. The thing that we talked about last week particularly is that God has used the good things that have happened to us and the bad things that have happened to us to shape us. It was great that Dane finished off with that that song, you know, the one about when I'm found in the desert place, I will praise you, blessed be your name. Because God has used the things that have happened to us that are negative and the things that are positive, even when things have happened to us that should never happen to anybody. God has used those things to make us what we are. I'm not saying that God made those things happen to us. And last week, of course, we actually had a look at a series of videos. This is just the shortest one.
I was born in Melbourne, Australia, 1982, and my parents had no idea that I was going to be born without arms or legs. I was the only one that they ever saw without limbs. My faith in Jesus Christ was sealed after 7 years of wondering why, God, I was born this way. He answered me very clearly through John chapter 9, and I gave my life to Jesus at 15 after reading about how he came across a man who was born blind. And I'm like, hey, hold on a second, this looks interesting. And no one knew why he was born that way. I'm like, perfect. So I read on, and in verse 3 of the 9th chapter, Jesus said, it was done so that the works of God would be revealed through him. And I'm like, wow, God, if you had a plan for the blind man, you do have a plan for me. And that was the beginning of my personal relationship with Jesus. Youth group.
I don't have the ability to compare the bad stuff that happened to this guy to the bad stuff that's happened to you. And nobody else has the right to do that either. Because God is with us in all of our circumstances. But we can use what happened to other people as an example to understand how we face the difficult things that happen to us. And this is the passage that Nick was referring to. As Jesus went along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? That's sort of karma thinking, isn't it? That what happened previously, either to you in another life or to his parents or to your parents, affects you. Neither this man nor his parents sinned, said Jesus, but this happened so that the works of God might be displayed in him. Right? So, here we go, guys. This seems to me to be a reasonable approach. And excuse me if you feel I'm imposing something on you that you don't want to take on. But it seems to me that the Bible sort of underwrites this. It is possible for you to look full in the face of the bad things that have happened to you, as well as the good things that have happened to you in your life, and say, this happened so that the works of God might be shown through you. And I'm studying some stuff that I mentioned to you a couple of weeks back as an approach to helping us get through some of the problems we all face. And essentially, the approach is this, that we feel the way we do now when we've got negative feelings because of what we believe. Right? We feel the way we do now when we've got positive feelings because of what we believe. Okay? The problem is that sometimes we believe things that are untrue. So we think, because my life was like this, let's think of something trivial or simple. Because I've wasted my education, God cannot work with me now. Okay? We say, because my parents never brought me up to be good with money, I'm always going to be poor. Okay? Now, you can fill in your bits there. And I'm purposely just plucking things out of the air because we could make this very, very personal, and it would be very easy for us to talk about things that affected whole chunks of us here, and that we know, because we know one another, we're in a community, make us feel that our life is damaged and we don't have a chance. But if we believe things that are true, which is that God has made us what we are, then that has hugely transformative potential. It makes everything possible. And you'll see this year, whenever I get a chance to speak, I'll be dipping back into this sort of area. So, what's next? I'm going to show you another video. I'm not going to give you any context till afterwards, except to say this is another bit from Psalm 139, and it's part of a series done by Salt Film. And we'll give you the link to the whole series now, so I don't think I'm going to use the rest of them on there. Oh, need to start it. I could have cut it earlier, but just to keep the integrity of the film from the filmmaker's point of view, I've kept the fact that his problem got solved very, very quickly, didn't it? But the principle stands that there is nowhere we can go from God's Spirit. There is nowhere that we can flee from his presence. Of course, it's very easy to read that as negative, as though we wanted to get away from him. But when it really counts, knowing that God is with us wherever we are, wherever we go, is valuable. If I'm in hospital, if I've run out of money, if I've got nowhere to live, God is still there with me. If I make my bed in the depths, if I go up to the heavens, you're there. If I make my bed in the depths, you're there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle on the far side of the sea, even there, your hand will guide me. Your right hand will hold me fast. Okay, let's see for a moment. Whoops. No. Let's see if we can formulate a question. I've actually been trying to think about how to ask you to discuss this. And I think the thing is this. Let's think about when he was stuck, okay? When, excuse my writing, when sitting, yeah? Not when he was going to his mate's really big houses. It's interesting, Nathan. You're not the only one who's got mates with really posh houses. Yeah. Okay. And they've got bigger tellies than we have. So when sitting down, how does Psalm 139 help? Okay. When you're in the crap, right, when things aren't going well, how does the declaration of Scripture help? Okay, just brainstorm some of that out for a minute or two, and we'll put some of the things up on this board. Thirty seconds thinking, 90 seconds talking about it. Okay, guys, let's put some things up on the board. How might getting into Psalm 139 have helped?
Feelings are not always the truth.
Feelings are not the truth. That's one of the points that we were making, isn't it? We feel the way we do because we believe something. I think you can actually say that feelings aren't truth, full stop. They may reflect the truth, they may not. But what else would have helped?
It reminds us of God's promises.
It reminds us of God's promises. Yeah. Now, there's a bit of a catch in that one, of course, that we need to know God's promises. Yeah? So if you don't feed on God's promises, you don't have the chance to have truth come in to deal with the lies. And quite often, of course, what we need to do is to sit down with somebody and say, I am feeling like this. And to actually allow somebody to say to us, why are you feeling like this? What do you believe that leads you to feel like this? And then not to get in a huff when they say, well, is this true or is this a lie? Right? Okay. One of the things that's really good to try and avoid saying to people is, but you don't understand. Okay? We never understand where one another are. You know, because even if we've had a similar experience, it's not the same experience. But the thing is to try and get beyond whether somebody understands or not to whether it's them saying it or whether it's God saying it. And then you can try saying to God, you don't understand. Okay? You switch your attention, okay, to God. Because he's got bigger shoulders than I have. I know I don't understand. But I know the guy I work for does. This guy you work for as well. Okay, what else?
Even in your loneliest times, you're not alone.
Yeah, you're not alone. So it's almost the other end of saying whatever. Yeah? What's the implication of this? I feel this way. I believe this, so. Okay? There's a little thing which I don't know where it comes from, but used to be used by parents. I know that Wendy's parents used to use it when she was sulking, which is, nobody loves me, everybody hates me. Have you heard of that one?
Yeah.
So, I'm going to go and eat worms. Yeah. Or are you going to pull yourself together, sort yourself out? And it's funny, isn't it, that when we're sulking, we're at our most childish, not childlike, childish, not in touch with reality, not thinking things. Okay, let's keep going. Yeah.
Brings in hope, to it,
yeah. Brings in hope, yeah. Hope is a really, really important word to us. I think it's a word that's important to us in Dayspring that we haven't really had chance to reflect on very much. We're not the greatest church as far as faith is concerned. We're not the greatest church as far as performance is concerned. But we're a very hopeful church. Yeah? And that gears up the way, that affects the way we look at everything, including our finances, including our programme. When you've got that many kids in the church, you've got to be hopeful. Otherwise you'd go out and shoot yourself. Yeah. I have told you about my favourite sign that I would love to buy, but people would interpret it badly if I bought it and hung up in the church. You know, there's a shop that sells all sorts of kitsch tat in Emery Gate. They've got a sign in there. Any unaccompanied children will be sold to the circus. I would just love to have that. Yeah. Okay, what else?
Strength.
Sorry?
Strength.
It provides strength, doesn't it? We'll just take one more. Strength and security. Can I put that together?
Yeah.
Builds faith. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to stop there. Now, here's the point. We don't get the resources of God's mind if we don't apply God's mind to our situation. But let's think about this thing of good works. Right. Good works, good works, good works, good works. Where am I up to? Yeah. So God has got a destiny for us. Yeah? It's a big destiny. Some people think their destiny is tied up with their job or finding the right partner. There's a whole theory. I know that Greg and I have read this book that says men's destiny is found in an adventure romance and a quest for beauty or something. Well, that isn't there. You know, that's... God planned for us to have an adventure, find romance and a quest for beauty. No, God planned for us to do a life of good things or good works. And when you think of good works, what do you think of? What are good works, good things? Just actually, we won't put them up on the screen, on the board, but just brainstorm them among yourselves for a minute. How would you redefine, what term would you use that makes sense in English today for good works?
So bringing blessing to others.
Well, is there an extra meaning to the one which is used conventionally? Okay. If you drew a map of the meanings, right, here's the good works map, right? What things get included inside that map? Now, if I'm blinding you with science by talking about semantic mapping, then go on to use your own mind.
Things
that
were in
place. Okay. Things at last we're talking about.
Helping one another.
Anybody over there getting something?
Anything that leaves the world in a better place.
Anything that leaves... Yeah, anything that improves the world, that's a good one as well, isn't it? Helping one another, things at last.
Listening. Yeah.
Listening, that's an example of a good work.
Supporting people,
yeah. Right, so if you take things like listening and supporting people, helping one another, what's the thing that holds all those together?
Community.
Community, yeah. So all those things... are sort of connected. I did a little look at the way in which the Bible uses that stuff and did it about a week ago, then refined it yesterday and said I would print it out in the morning and failed to do so. So, yeah, I meant this morning. Then got caught. You know, what's the first time in the New Testament the phrase good works is used? That may sound like a difficult question, but I bet you can guess if you have a little think about it.
Genesis wasn't it?
No, in the New Testament, yeah.
angels.
No. Let your light shine before others so that people may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. It was right in Jesus' manifesto at the beginning. So good works are things which give light and lead people to glorify God. Okay, let me just go quickly through these. Good works include miracles, because Jesus said, which of these good works do you want to kill me for? And he was talking about the miracles he was doing. It includes acts of charity. There was a lady called Dorcas, Tabitha, in the book of Acts. Not a very well known story, but does anybody know that particular story? What was special about her? She used to make clothes. So good works, and as much as I dislike this, can include knitting. Right? It can be a good work, particularly done in private in a sound insulated room. Yeah. Good works are supposed to be a way of life, right? They fit with beauty. Do you know, because the concentration of talking about good works is in Paul's epistles about church life, the 1 Timothy, 2 Timothy and Titus. And there he says that women ought not be so much worried about facelifts and makeup and all that sort of stuff. Men too, I think, as well. Although, of course, my moisturiser is called Face Protector. not actually called moisturiser. Don't make much difference, but it's there. He actually says that what makes people beautiful is more about doing good works than about poshing yourself up. Okay? Now, that was the point of that advert we showed from Thailand right at the beginning, you remember? The story is, and you can go back to the links, they're all there on the audio section of the website, where there was that young woman, and the story was that she was very ordinary, but that what made her beautiful was her care for that child that she had adopted. Okay? That really biblical statement in that story. Some of the things it includes. It actually includes bringing up children. It's a good work. Showing hospitality. Looking after people who are involved in ministry. I think that's what it means by wash the saints' feet. Helping the afflicted, people who've got problems in one way or another, being ready to share. People who've got money, it talks about a good work for them is being generous. Here's something it says about good works. It says that good works are conspicuous. That ties back to what Jesus said in Matthew, doesn't it? Let your light shine before men so they may see your good works. Good works show. And it says, even if they're not conspicuous and people don't notice them in the first place, truth will out and good works will show, kindnesses will show. Okay? We're supposed to be, those of us who are leaders, are supposed to be models of good works. It's something you can model. And in Titus, the book of Titus was really strange. It was written by Paul to Titus when he was working in Crete, you know, the island in the Mediterranean. And Paul is really insulting about the people of Crete, if you read in the early parts there. And he says to Titus, I want you to give special emphasis to these matters so that those who believe in God may be concerned with giving their time to good deeds, good works, which are good and useful for everyone. And then he goes on to say that people should devote themselves to good works rather than discussing religious stuff. Yeah? He actually says that contrasts good works with talking about religious things. And really interesting, isn't it? And then he goes on a couple of verses later, says, let people learn to devote themselves to good works in order to meet urgent needs. Got any urgent needs? You know, sometimes as a leadership team, it will happen, particularly among those of us who are around during the day, that we will say to one another, This is just firefighting. We're running round to work to look after urgent needs and neglecting other things. Well, Paul says, good works are involved with meeting the urgent needs. The things have got to be done. He says that good works make you productive. Okay? So there's a lot of stuff there about good works. I can give you the Bible references for those. We can write them up if we get time during the week. So here's good works. Now let's go back to that guy, that guy who was in the video. We'll call him Oscar for a moment, yeah? Now, here's another question for you. How have we got onto here? Another question. Here's the question. What good works do you think that his experience might have prepared him for?
Who's
Oscar, in the video, just along a bit, yeah? The guy who was made homeless and was on his own. What good works might that have prepared him for? Okay, talk to one another about it and then we'll get it back in. I have to do it very quickly, actually. Okay, I got distracted by the good works thing and spent a bit longer on that than I intended to, so I've got to move the thing forward. I want to show you another video from Thailand now. This is another advert. Don't pay too much attention to try and work out what it's advertising. You'll get there at the end because they put the caption in. But it's this, and I'm asking you a question. I'm a bit nervous about asking this question because when I say, what's your instrument, we can get confused between good works and performance. What are you good at performing at? What fulfills you? But of course, as we understand how God has made us, it will be that the way he has planned and prepared for us will fulfill us in a way that performance never can. But here's my question to you. What's your instrument? Could you flick the lights for us? Okay, well, I know there is, for some of you, the message might well have been that if you don't wear a red dress and you have long hair, then you will win. And of course, having long hair is really important in Thailand. It seems to be in Britain at the moment as well, because we were at a Swindon Academy gym and dance show at the Wyvern Theatre, and long hair, Annabelle, is definitely the thing above all else. In fact, the number of girls who swept the stage with their hair that night was really impressive. The story is this, isn't it? I just love the way they put these things together. It's, sort of comic book with very high production values. But the point is that there was something that she couldn't do. There was the potential for her doing it. Along the way, the instrument got broken. And here's my question to you. What about you? Is there something at this point in life that you look back on and say, if only I would have been able to make a much better contribution than I am now? Not to your own success or excellence, which is what I mean about performance, but is there something that could have happened? And is it true that God has planned for us to do good things? Because if so, from where you are now, everything, no, I didn't say except what has happened to you, okay, I said everything that has taken place in your life is putting you in a position where God can work with you. And when God works with us, we call it the kingdom of God coming. Yeah. Everything that's happened to you has put you in place where you are prepared for a life of good works. We say that we are all about living, and that's what living is. is finding out what God has made you for. Finding out what God has made you for. Now, instead of me praying, I'm going to... by the way, I thought it was really nice about is the caption at the end was, "You can shine." There. I didn't notice that till I watched it for the 94th time yesterday. But see, God says this. This is why, just to explain right at the beginning, you know, I was a bit carping about the word masterpiece and the word about handiwork. I think it makes us sound like a finished job when that's in place. But Paul says this to the Philippians, "I am confident of this, that he who began a good work in you will carry it on to completion until the day of Jesus Christ." Don't say, "Well, I'm not ready yet to be able to do good works." Of course you are. You never will be ready until we find ourselves finally with Jesus. So, instead of praying, just have a little listen to this last, the last verse of, I've not found what I'm looking for. Some of the imagery doesn't quite work, but it's better than nothing. So, there you go. If you're not at the point yet where you can say, "I was made for this, I was born for this," there is a place that you can get to. Okay. And it's something to do with realising that God has made us who we are. I'm sure that's not the last word on the subject. I hope it's the first word and that we carry on the conversation. Okay, next week we're not meeting here. For those of you who can, we're meeting at Monkton Coombe. Okay, that's it. Lunch.